with Governor Jerry Brown. And when looking at your governorship today, as opposed to a few decades ago, do you think you're the same governor now as you were then?
Well, I'm the same person, but obviously with the passage of many decades, things change. We're in a very different world, more polarized. We have issues such as climate change that were not thought of before. And it's very hard to compare one period with another, but I do see in matters of energy, water, educational reform and its various interpretations, crime and punishment, transportation, and then, of course, health care with the President's Affordable Care Act. They're the perennial issues, but they take different forms. I think there's far more distrust of the political class, and given the global nature of the economy, there's different perspectives than there were 30 or 40 years ago.
Well, what about you as a person?
Well, it's a funny thing about being a person. It feels a certain way, and you don't wake up being something different. We have names for those kind of people. So I just look and see the world as it is. But obviously, through study and through experience and through taking action, some that work, some that don't, I get different ideas and different impressions, and that obviously affects me. But I know that question, you know, how is life different now than last year, or is it different? I don't know. I find that very, it doesn't mean a lot to me. I take the world as I find it. I find being governor very exciting. The issues now are more salient. I never had a $27 billion deficit in my life. That was a first. And then getting rid of it, that was another first. And then actually putting a tax measure on the ballot to tax very high-income people. I never did that before. So there are many things that show up. They have similarities to the past, but they're always fresh and new in the current situation that I face.
What about your management style? I've heard people say that you're more focused now, that you pick a few main priorities and stick with them rather than trying to do everything at once. True?
Well, I don't know whether that's true or not. People have a lot of descriptions and interpretations. I don't have so many. What I do know is that the problems are clearer, and that might create an impression of focus. But when there's a $27 billion deficit, that focuses your attention, because unless you fix it, the people are unhappy, the credit ratings are unhappy, it creates great stress and unpredictability. So I had to focus on that big problem. If you take something like school funding, when you have 2 million kids who come from families that don't speak English, and of the 6 million students, kindergarten through 12, you have 3 million that are of low income, then you need a different formula than what you had before. And that's exactly what I did in enacting a formula that sent money disproportionately to low-income and non-speaking English families. So I think focus, it's almost like if you're in a foxhole and you come under fire, you're a lot more focused than if you're, you know, sitting on a beach reading a newspaper. So I would say, by the nature of things, the problems are greater, they're more specific, and therefore I find it much easier to array priorities than when I was governor the last time, and we had a $5.5 billion surplus. And the question there was, well, what the hell are we going to do with all that money? Here, it's pretty clear that if we don't do something drastic about the $27 billion deficit, you know, we'll be in the poorhouse or bankruptcy or some other terrible thing. So action was mandatory, not optional.
And everyone likes to point out, and you have too a couple of times, that you're not running for president.
No. Well, I'm doing the job of governor of the eighth largest economy in the world, and that ought to be enough for any one person.
And it's enough for you, right?
No, nothing is enough for me, but I enjoy it.
There's a book about you from back during your first term called The Man on the White Horse by one of your former top aides, Jim Lorenz, and the book itself was critical, I think, a fair amount. But there's a quote in there I'd like to ask you about. He says, Jerry was the mirror of the society in the mid-1970s. He was giving us, the voters, what he thought we wanted. Did you then, and do you mirror California society in 2013?
Well, wait a minute. Any politician that doesn't give the people, in some sense, what they want, will not be in office very long. We are in a world where people want certain things. Those things are expressed in political campaigns or debates, and you got to stand and deliver or you're out. So I mirror the public mood in some sense, but I bring my own unique life experience. My father was a governor. I went to both public and Catholic schools in the period before the Vatican II reforms. I've worked with Mother Teresa in India. I did Zen meditation in Japan for 6 months. I lived in Mexico or Latin America for more than a half a year. I've had a lot of experiences, and I bring those to bear on whatever I do. So I reflect the times that I'm in, but I have my own singular angle on what our predicament is and how I go about responding to it.
And how would you describe that, your singular angle?
Well, that's not describable very easy, because I look at the world and I try to see it with clear eyes. Most of us, or all of us, are burdened by our own prejudice, our own training, our own place where we came from, and I'm no exception to that. But I do make it my interest and my sense or calling that I want to look at things in as fresh a way as I can. I like to turn things over. Okay, it looks this way. Well, could we see it another way? And if you listen to Republicans or Democrats, you listen to people from one kind of background or another, they all have different imaginaries. Their world, it shows up to them in various degrees, more or less differently. And I look at those differences and I try to see what's the best interpretation or the most accurate sense of what's going on in California, what's going on in America, and what's to be done, and what can I do? So I have an abiding sense of curiosity. I consider myself living in inquiry, not hopefully in cliches or yesterday's received wisdom. And so that would be the perspective that I would want to share, and that I strive to bring to bear in all the different issues that come up in face a governor.
Another thing I hear people point to is your local government experience as mayor of Oakland in between your two governorships is helping you out now. Do you see state government differently now because of your time as mayor?
Well, yeah, I do see government differently. In Oakland, there was a lot of abandonment, empty storefronts, deteriorated blocks in various parts of the city, and I wanted to see it rebuilt. And I ran into opposition, people using the language of the environment or equity or some darn thing, and I saw it as just blocking obvious investment. People want to put up a building, they want to put up some condominium, they want to put something on the water. And what we lacked in Oakland was people who had the means to contribute and to make Oakland a more thriving place. And yet, there would always be a parade of people at City Hall saying, no, don't do that. That building is 50 feet high and only should be 42 feet high. There are 20 units. I think you should scale back, three of those units. Well, there was a lot of nitpicking and a lot of generalization about whether it's anti-war or whether it's protecting the environment or some kind of representation of this group or another. And it often covered, to my experience and to my seeing and sense of things. Just people not understanding what was best for the city of Oakland. So having seen through the camouflage of rather grandiose, nice-sounding claims and phrases and politics, I have a more penetrating gaze when people say, well, sign this bill or don't do this or that. My accumulated experience over 40 years helps me to separate the wheat from the chaff. And there's a lot of chaff around here, that I can tell you.
In less than 2 months, you'll become the longest serving governor in California history. In the 70s, you talked about a small is beautiful philosophy for government. You're looking at a couple of big picture projects now, water, Delta Tunnel projects, and high-speed rail. What do you want your legacy to be?
Well, I don't think about my legacy. That's a word I don't know, it's kind of, I conjure up Gothic architecture or something.
Well, then let's push past that. You know, what do you want people to remember you for? Yeah.
Well, I'm not in the state of mind I'm looking for to be remembered. I'm still living and acting and struggling and fighting, so I can't be bothered by who's going to remember what. There's too much yet to be done. But I will say this. In the 1970s, I saw Schumacher's book, Small is Beautiful, and what I liked about it, it was economics as if human beings mattered. It emphasized or pointed to human scale. As governor this time, I've articulated a principle of subsidiarity. Let local schools handle as much responsibility as possible. Don't look to Washington or to the state capitol to set forth minute prescriptions on what to do or not to do. So the notion of scale, of what can human beings do for themselves, with others, what can they do in the neighborhood, in the city, and then what must the state do, or what must the federal government do? I still think the proper allocation of power between the federal and the state and the local community is a very very important topic, and I sign and veto bills based on how I think the allocation is being made.
Thank you, Governor Brown.
Yeah, thank you.